Mr. Stille.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, counsel. I represent the appellant Robert Lawrence. And the first thing I would say is we're here on a case today in which the government, apparently for the first time in 25 years, is making the legal argument that the OMB, that the Form 1040 complies with the Paperwork Reduction Act. It fully complies, has all the required disclaimers and disclosures and a valid OMB number, despite the fact that this argument was not raised below. We're doing this for the first time on appeal. It would seem a very strange way for the government to make its case if it really believed the argument. Furthermore, it's making other arguments too, which tells the court, basically, we're not really sure about this argument. Now, we expect you to believe it. We want you to believe it so much that you'll take judicial notice. You'll go out on a website and you'll look at these things and you'll say, no one could disagree with that. And therefore, we're going to find that, yes, these 1040 forms comply with the Paperwork Reduction Act. Now, let's look at, we've got the 1040 forms here in this case. They're in the appendix. You can look at them. They don't have any of the warnings that are required under the law. There are several warnings. I've listed those on page 8 of my brief, and you can see those. We don't need to go through all of those. If you just look at the one that says that the I'll just read to you from the statute, the last of the five paragraphs of what is required to be placed on a form. It says, the fact that an agency may not conduct or sponsor and a person is not required to respond to a collection of information unless it displays a valid control number. Now, we don't have anything of that nature on the 1040. We don't have a try of any kind. We do have instruction booklets, but if we've learned anything in 25 years of litigating, we have learned that the instruction booklets are not information collection requests. They are not required to comply with the PRA for that simple reason. But for the same reason, what is stated in that booklet doesn't count. It's not good enough. And even if what was stated in the booklet did count, even if that was good enough, when you look at what the IRS says, it says a person is not required to respond to a collection of information if it's subject to the PRA. They're leaving themselves the out, the escape hatch, for the statutory origin theory, which they have liked to use from time to time.
Could I just stop you for a minute?
Sure, please.
Because I understand your argument to be that the indictment was improper.
Well, that here's what I'm saying. I'm saying not particularly that the indictment is improper, but the indictment alleged a violation of 7201 and 7203 of the Internal Revenue Code, whereas the instruction booklet says that the requirement to file comes from 6001, 6011, and 6012. Well, if the public has been told that there are three statutes and their regulations that provide the requirement to file, then to charge somebody with a different statute and say, you should have known based on what we told you, it's absurd. At least if the government wants to claim that these other statutes form the basis, form the requirement to file a return, they need to say so in their instruction booklets, even though that's inadequate.
And that is what you believe demonstrates that the criminal case was vexatious and in bad faith.
Oh, that's just a teeny tiny little bitty part of it.
Because what is the other part of it?
The other part of it, even if the government had cited 6001, 6011, or 6012, and we don't know which they would have, but even if they had cited one of those, the form still doesn't comply. It has none of the disclosures. And even the disclosure in the instruction booklet does not do what Congress explicitly in the 1995 Act said, you have to do this. There's no halfway. You have to do this.
But, counsel, the law as it currently stands, as I understand it, and as it stood at the time of this prosecution, was that the PRA doesn't provide a defense to a criminal prosecution. So how can this prosecution have been vexatious and in bad faith if the law at the time said the PRA isn't a defense to a criminal prosecution?
Well, that would be amazing. I don't know if you're talking about statute or you're talking about case law. I believe there's case law where that individual was charged with failure to supply information and defeated a criminal case on that grounds.
I'm talking about the Sahlberg case in this circuit.
Okay. Well, now, the Sahlberg relates to the 1980 Act, where we're down at the 1995 Act, which eliminated the exemptions for the IRS and made it clear that everybody has to comply with the law, even the IRS. Now, let's keep in mind, we're talking about a penalty killer. We're not talking about something to abolish the income tax or anything of that nature. We're talking about a penalty killer. And to say that a criminal conviction with all the attendant injuries of that is not a penalty would seem to me to be very amazing.
Let me rephrase my question then. You were trying a new defense here that had not been recognized by a published appellate opinion, at least in this circuit. Isn't that right? Is there any case law, or was there at the time of this prosecution, that recognized the defense that you were asserting?
Not in the Seventh Circuit, Your Honor.
Okay. But let's stop. It can't have been a vexatious prosecution.
Sure, it could. Let's stop and think about this. If we say that the federal government is not required to obey the rules until there's a case, then Congress can make all the laws that it wants. But until somebody goes to court and proves this is so, then they can disregard the words of Congress. It's plain here that the IRS did not follow the mandates of Congress. Any low-level clerk comparing the 1040 form to the law, the plain language of the law, would know this doesn't comply. So OMB could not, in good faith, have approved these 1040s.
There are no such cases. How could the first case ever... How could the PRA render the government's prosecution vexatious or frivolous or in bad faith if there are no cases on point that would establish that the PRA prohibits such a prosecution? I mean, there has to be a first case, doesn't there?
There sure has to be a
that
first case.
That had to say that.
I hope that
you want it to be us.
Certainly. This is a great first case, but let me explain to you why I think that this case should not only state the law, but it should also hold
maybe
a government...
the last one, too.
Beg your pardon?
Maybe the last one, too.
Well, Your Honor, honestly, I hope that the government will decide that it wants to comply with the PRA.
I just don't understand the problem. 1040 shows an OMB control number. You essentially conceded that indeed OMB did approve it. What else is left?
No, I do not concede. I do not concede that the OMB approved that.
What reason do you have to believe that OMB did not, in fact, approve it and give the Treasury that control number, which is shown on the form?
Well, the number's on the form. I don't dispute that the number's on the form. What I'm disputing is that the OMB did its job, reviewed it, and approved it. Because when you look at...
The OMB website says they've approved it. What reason do you have to think that unless... You know, as one says, even paranoid people are sometimes persecuted. But your view seems to rely on the fact that everybody is lying, and you're entitled to recover attorney's fees without proving that they're lying. But, you know, it's on the form, it's on the OMB website. What reason have you to believe they haven't approved it?
Your Honor, I gave them a notice under 28J for a case that just came out.
Do you have any reason to believe that they have not approved it?
That they have not, that the OMB has not reviewed and approved the form, correct? That's the question.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because anybody looking at the form knows that it doesn't comply.
Look, that's not an answer to my question. The argument the OMB made a mistake is different from the proposition the OMB didn't approve it. Do you have any reason to believe that OMB did not, in fact, approve it?
Your Honor, this has been...
The answer is yes or no.
I do not agree that they approved it. I do not agree that they approved it.
Do you have any reason to believe that they did not, in fact, approve it?
Since the government didn't make this argument below, we had no chance to make a record on this, but I'd like the chance to make a record on it.
You do not have any reason. Now, how did you file this complaint consistent with Rule 11 without having reason to believe that the form had not been approved?
Your Honor, I filed this, you're saying civil, the rule of civil procedure, Rule 11, correct?
Mm.
In the Pond case, which I cited to this court, or I gave 28J notice, in the Pond case said there has to be a currently valid OMB number, and it has to give the warnings that are required by the law. And you know what the Pond case said? The Pond case said, you didn't put the 1040 forms in, so therefore we don't have the forms whereby that we can look and see whether these two things that you asked for took place.
Thank you, Mr. Stiller.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Risley.
May it please the court and counsel. Your Honors, this is a Hyde Amendment case, not a PRA case. Now, the PRA is involved, yes, but we need to keep our eye on the ball here. And the question is, did the district court err in refusing to grant the defendant's request for attorney's fees under the Hyde Amendment? Now, the threshold issue here, there are probably several different angles you could take, but we suggest that the threshold issue here is the standard of review issue, which is of yet undecided in this circuit, although it's been resolved in other circuits. And as we've said in the brief, we take the position that the standard of review should be an abuse of discretion standard that rests largely upon the language of the Hyde Amendment itself, which says the court may award attorney's fees to a prevailing party where certain findings of fact are entered. That combination of may and findings of fact are quintessential indications of a discretion in the district court.
Mr. Risley, I'm very interested in why an error in calculation would cause the government to dismiss with prejudice even the counts that were unaffected by that error. It's a mystery. So would you unravel it?
Well, Your Honor, to do so, I would have to go outside the record, and even then I'd have to speculate somewhat because I wasn't involved in those discussions. I do believe it's reasonable to assume that the government took the position that it was just simply so embarrassing, that the error was so fundamental, that it undermined the government's credibility even if the government were to win. And I don't know that those were the reasons. It's not in the record that those are the reasons, but I can't think of any other reason. So
it doesn't make any sense because you can always get an amended indictment.
Right.
This was on the eve of trial.
So what?
And a grand jury would have to be in session.
Right, you asked the district court for something very foolish, which was to amend the indictment, and the district judge says, excuse me, that's not my job, right? Go get a new indictment. And then you dismiss. I mean, it seems very peculiar to me, as it did to Judge Rovner, and the answer you've given makes no sense.
It's the only answer that I can think of, Your Honor, and again, it's speculation. There's nothing in the record.
I actually don't understand your brief in this case either. There are two sets of counts. One was failure to file, and the other was tax evasion. I don't understand what the Paperwork Reduction Act could conceivably have to do with the tax evasion counts.
Nor do we. Not at all. And in fact, that very point would be is one of the angles that would be dispositive in this case. The defendant, to prevail, would have to establish that the government knew at the time the indictment was brought, at the time it pursued the prosecution, that because of a failure to comply with Paperwork Reduction Act requirements, that there was no legal merit to the charges. Well, at that point in time, it was well-settled law that the PRA was not a defense to such charges. And as you've indicated, it certainly has nothing to do with the most serious charges, namely the tax evasion charges. And so consequently, even if this court were to adopt the position urged by the defendant today and set the tax world on its head during tax season, the defendant would have to establish that somehow the government prophetically recognized that the court would take that somewhat inexplicable position on the law. The government, absent that, cannot be said to be vexatious, frivolous, or bad faith when they bring charges based on well-settled law. Bottom, that is what this case is about. We ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.